All right, so turn to your neighbor real quick and say, you are so good looking. All right, just real quick. It's important. Now that y'all know you're really good looking, on your way out today, out the middle doors, there is a picture booth that you can just turn to your right as you leave, and there's a little place where you can take Easter pictures if you want, so be sure to check that out. How many of you have ever done an escape room before? Have you ever done an escape room? All right, a few of you. If you don't know what escape rooms are, basically you go pay a bunch of money for people to lock you in a room, and if you don't get out within an hour, you die. Like, that's just how it works, I think. I don't know. I personally love a good escape room. I had some buddies come into town a few weeks ago, and they're like, oh, you guys have escape rooms? And I was like, dude, do we have escape rooms? We have such good escape rooms in Lexington. So we went to Countdown Escape Rooms, and we went there, and we did this one. It's, maybe you've done it before. You walk in, and it's this giant concrete castle. I mean, I think it's like three stories to it. And they literally lock you in the room. They're like, oh. It's always like some teenager is like, oh, good luck. And they lock you. You're like, why'd you laugh right before you locked us in here, you know? And they shut the door. And I'm just being honest with you. My personality is, when I'm in those situations, all my buddies nerd out on it. They're like, oh, let's start counting the fence posts. And they're like doing all. And I'm over there like making jokes. Like I'm picking up little frogs. And I'm like, hey, talk to the frog. And they're like, can't stop it. You're driving me nuts. Because that's just who I am. I'm like that. Until like the last 15 or 20 minutes. And all of a sudden, like, I look up and I see the clock, and I've been helping out a little bit, and then it hits me. I'm like, we're not gonna get out of here alive. And all of a sudden, it feels like it counts, you know? Like, it just feels like it counts. And I start to actually get engaged. I was thinking about our world over the last couple of years. Maybe you, the last couple of years, your whole life has just changed. Do you remember there was that little thing called COVID? Remember that? And some of us would like to forget it, and some of us are still living in the middle of it. And it changed our entire world, right? 2 years ago, you were told that you had to lock everything down. You couldn't leave your house. I remember going to Sam's, and there were like lines all the way around of people with just loads of toilet paper in their carts. And remember those days? Like, you just, everything shut down, your whole life changed. You started having to work at home. Some of you lost jobs. Some of you changed jobs. There was you lived in the middle of financial insecurity. You lived in the middle of losing people, like serious, serious loss. You lived in the middle of getting in fights with your family to the point where you didn't even want to go to Christmas because you just didn't want to fight and you didn't want to talk about masks or no masks anymore. And you, like, do you remember? I mean, I know it's not that long ago. And then when everything, like, it seems like everybody has just wanted to forget it and pretend like it never happened. And now all of a sudden we're on the verge of World War III and like countries invading other countries. And so, like, people have all kinds of opinions about that. And it just feels like, to me, it has felt like, if ever, now is the time that it counts. You know what I mean? Like, it just feels like there's all this pressure on us. And there has been tremendous pressure. And it's like nobody's talking about it. But there's all this trauma and all this stuff that's happened to us. And here's at least in my circle what's happening. Everyone I know is trying to find ways to escape. Right? They're going on huge vacations, and because they're like, finally I can go somewhere. Florida's been open the whole time. They go to Florida and everybody's at the beach, and oh, I just need some beach and sun. Some of you have tried to escape by you've gone, and like, have you heard of the Great Resignation? Like, everybody in America is changing jobs and moving on to something different. They're moving into different roles in life. I've known people that have walked away from spouses. I know people that have entered into relationships. I know, and I don't know that all that is because of this, but I do think it feels like the time counts in our life, doesn't it? It feels like I don't know that I just get extra minutes on my clock all the time. See, the problem is, though, is that the things we run to for escape, they're really only short-term fixes. They're like drops in the buckets. They all still leave us locked in a room. I know some people. I got a friend who started turning to like bourbon and whiskey and just have like a glass at night, just unwind. It's probably a lot of you do that. And all of a sudden, it became like I couldn't not have that glass, and I couldn't not have another glass and another glass and another glass. And he's not alone. It's not like It's not like he's the unique one. We all are seeking these fixes in our life. We all want something to fix it. But the reality is everything that we try, you work hard, you try to be successful. Maybe you're even good at what you do. But you know as well as I do, that high that you get from it only lasts for like a little bit of time. It never seems to last. And you need another high. You need something else. You need something to make you feel again. So here's the question for me. How do you find the real fix for what your soul longs for? Because what is really happening is you have an ache inside of you that needs to be filled. I remember very clearly even feeling that even as a teenager. I worked at Domino's Pizza, and it was awesome because you got free pizza, right? So I worked at Domino's Pizza, and I can remember coming home late at night. I had driven my red 1985 Nissan Sentra, and I shut the door to it, and I got out, and it's nighttime, and I looked up at the stars. And I can remember even as a teenager just going, there's got to be more. There's got to be more to this life. Tell me you haven't felt that. Tell me you haven't gotten off a night shift and your days have all ran together because every single one is the exact same and you just walk into your house going, there's got to be more. Like, I think we've all felt that. I want to, if I could for a moment, take you into this historical moment in Jesus's life. And I'll be honest with you, the people that Jesus is dealing with are not unlike us. Now, they have not just gone through a two-year pandemic and are on the edge of World War III, all right? So their life is different, but they were in just as challenging of situation. Actually, they are probably more akin to the Ukrainians than to us. This country that Jesus lived in, Israel. Israel has been around for a long time, if you didn't know. And at this time in Israel's history, they had had a huge force called Rome that came in, and Rome overtook Israel, and they occupied them. So just like what's happening with Russia and the Ukraine right now, that happened with Israel. They fought as hard as they could, but they end up losing, and they are now an occupied nation. Right? So when you see pictures of Russian soldiers in Ukraine, you can take the same idea and picture that in Israel. They've got Roman soldiers everywhere. They are keeping them oppressed. These people, they are not free like us. They don't know the freedom that you and I know. Not only that, but they are like poor, like dirt poor people. Like, not, I wonder if we have enough money to buy all of our food and pay our bills this month. More like, I wonder if we have enough money to put one meal on the table for our kids every day. I sure hope we do. Every day they work all day and they wait and they eat one really big meal at night and hope that that's enough for their kids. And sometimes the parents don't eat either. They are a people that knows incredible need. They know incredible suffering. They are hurting. And Jesus has been working with them. He's been meeting their needs and helping people out. And all of a sudden, he needs a break. Actually, what happened was his cousin had been killed by some of the rulers of the day. And he needs a break. And so he goes off with his buddies to be alone. You ever done that? Like, hey, you guys want to go out to the woods and go kayaking or maybe fishing or hunting or something, right? That's like, he's doing that with his buddies. He needs to get alone with them. And they go off, and they're off by themselves, and they're going away to get away by themselves. But when they get there, Jesus is such a rock star. I mean, he is like Johnny Cash. He is like, how many of you love Dolly Parton? I mean, he is like Dolly Parton. He is like, somebody I know just went to watch Elton John, I think, last night. Like, he is whoever it is that you love. He is that person. And Jesus, he's famous, and so he can't even get away when he wants to. He gets to where he's going. They're on a boat, and he gets there. And when he gets there, it's literally like a rock concert. There are thousands of people waiting for him. As a matter of fact, when the writers of this historical event recorded it, they only recorded how many men were there. I know, it's terrible, right? Like, I'm not advocating that that's okay. But they did say there were women and children also. So imagine if you recorded that there were 5,000 men and women and children. That means there's upwards of 10 to 15,000 people easily on these shores that Jesus arrives to. Now, if it's me who arrives and there's 10 to 15,000 people and I'm tired and I'm worn out, I don't know if you're like me, but I would be like, nope, nuh-uh. And I'd like turn around and get in the boat, right? And I'd be gone. I'd be a sea of suckers. Row, boys, row. Like, that's how I'd... But Jesus isn't like that. You know what this historical eyewitness said was that when Jesus gets out of the boat, what it said was that he said, that he looked at them and he saw that they were like sheep without a shepherd. Like they were people who needed somebody to have compassion on them. So Jesus has compassion. He starts to heal people. Like he starts to teach them and talk to them. And then it gets to be late in the day. And here, get this, there is no Chick-fil-A. Like, there's no place to eat. Like isn't that terrible? Like, there's no fast food restaurant. They're actually out kind of in the middle of the wilderness. There is nothing for them. And Jesus does something that is spectacular. Fantastic. Actually, I heard Elon Musk recently talking about this, and it was one of the things that actually caused him to not be sure, not, like kind of wander away from faith, because he would ask questions about this miracle I'm about to tell you about, and people would just be like, oh, stop asking questions. That's dumb. If you have questions, you should ask questions, all right? Like, so here's what the miracle was. Jesus looks at them, and he takes 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, and he somehow miraculously multiplies that food and starts handing it out, and everybody is fed, and they pick up 12 basketfuls of food left over afterwards. It is incredible. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know how he did it. Maybe he had armpit magic and he like pulled stuff out of his armpit. You know, I don't know how he did it, but I know he did it. And here's what's crazy. Now, first of all, you need to know, this is not the first time that miracle has actually happened. Did you know that? Some of you Christians out there, did you know it wasn't the first time? That actually, Elisha performed the same miracle. And he did it for about 100 people. Ooh, 100 people. Way to go, Elisha. I think Jesus, it's not for him about the miracle of making the bread. I think he's trying to make a statement to these people who would have known about that miracle that Elisha performed. I think he is saying to them, I'm the one who provided that miracle and provides all the miracles. I am to the nth degree better than anybody you've ever seen, right? It makes sense to you? So that's the context of what we're about to enter into. These people who are in incredible need, they're in the escape room of life. How do we get out? They get all this food delivered to them for free. Eat as much as you want. And so do you know what they want? Jesus wants to get away again. He tries to escape. Later that night, he tries to sneak off. He's like, right? He's like, he like tries to escape. And guess what? The people see him, and so he's on just kind of like a little lake, and they kind of run around the lake to get to where Jesus is. So when he gets there, they're there again. And he's like, ah, come on, man. Because what they just saw was a guy who could provide them free Chick-fil-A for the rest of their life, right? And they start to ask him, can you give us more of that bread? Could you take care of our needs? Like, if you did it once, could you be the guy? Could you do that? And here's what Jesus says to them. I want you to listen to this, all right? So that's kind of the story. They want quick solutions, but they want a solution that won't fix their souls. And this is what Jesus says. Listen to this. John 6:53-54. And I want you, as I read this, like some of you, maybe you're here and like your mom said, you don't get to eat ham if you don't come to church, right? Like, so maybe that's you. Maybe your wife drug you and she was like, we are going to church this morning. I don't know. I get it. Like, if that's you, like, so if you're listening, I want to give you permission to be like, what I'm about to read, I want you to have full permission to be like, that is weird, all right? So, and everybody else, you should take off all your churchy blinders, because I need you to hear how weird this is, what Jesus is about to say. Listen to this. John 6:53-54. Jesus said to them, very truly I tell you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man — now Son of Man is a title Jesus used for himself all the time. It would be kind of like him saying, like, I'm the man kind of thing. Like, he is a human. He's trying to make them see he is a man. Like, he possesses all the things that all other men have. He says, unless you eat the flesh of me and you drink his blood, you have no life in you. That's kind of weird. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise them up at the last day. When I was a kid, my dad played the old Dracula movie for — I mean, it's like black and white Dracula. If you've never seen it, don't go watch it. It's terrible. But I was a little kid, and I was terrified of it. And there's, like, what Dracula would do is he would turn into smoke, and he would come under doors. I think it's because they didn't have good special effects. I think the special effects were literally like guys with packs of cigarettes, like smoking and blowing it under the door, you know, like it's, you see all the smoke come out and they're blowing the cigarette smoke. I don't know if it's really cigarette smoke, but there's all the smoke coming out, and then Dracula would be there and he would suck some person's blood. And I could, man, I'm watching it. I'm on my 1970s couch, you know, and I'm sitting there and I'm watching it. My brother, I'm like, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, are you okay? And I'm like, I don't know. And I'm so freaked out. And there's a lady, and you know, she's going to get it like Dracula's. And you're wanting to be like, lady, run, don't fall for Dracula. He's going to get you. And so right at that moment where Dracula appears, and he's like, oh, blah, blah, I want to suck your blood, right? And he's like, going to suck her blood because he's a vampire. Right at that moment where it's the crux of it and everything's all the tension in the world, all of a sudden my dad, who's a jerk, right? He has been doing what every dad has done since the beginning of time. Like, I picture Adam in Adam and Eve's story doing this to his kids. Like, he has been crawling on his hands and knees behind the couch for that one moment, right? Every dad is like, oh yeah, I've done that before. Like, and my dad, the moment comes and my dad goes, like that, and I'm like, aah! And I totally soil myself. I mean, it is like, I don't know if I did, but I probably did. I started wearing Depends after that. That's all I know. now, I need to tell you this. Jesus doesn't, what he said is so much more gruesome than a Dracula vampire. Like, it's so much more gruesome. Because what Jesus said is not, I'm going to suck your blood. He said, you need to eat my flesh and drink my blood. If you don't, you have no life. If you do, you get eternal life. And on the last day, when all things are kind of ending in this world, I'll raise you up again. He's making the point. He's making the point that the only eternal fix for your soul, the only escape, is him. And I need you to hear this. That's a crazy statement. Isn't it? Like, I know, we're at church, you shouldn't be calling Jesus crazy, like, is lightning going to strike you? I don't know, like, but that's crazy that he would say that. It's nuts that he would say that, because eat your flesh? Did you know that early Christians, people thought that they were actually cannibals because of this stuff? Like, they thought we sat around and we ate, like, we were down there like, could you pass me another leg? And we're like, I sure like the jawbone, right? Like, that's what they thought. Listen, it's crazy to think someone would be audacious enough to say that he could fix that hole in your heart, that deep part of you that knows there has to be something more. Because here's what the world says about Jesus. Maybe you even believe this, especially maybe somebody drug you here, your mom forced you, whatever. You're doing it to be nice to your spouse. I don't know why you're here, but the crazy thing about all this is that most of us would say, would at least we'd be like, I don't know if I believe in Jesus, but I mean, I guess if I had to say anything, I'd say he's a pretty good teacher. I'd say if I had to say anything, he was a good moralist. Like, you know, that whole, like, don't like turn the other cheek if somebody hits you. Like, that's probably a good way to do it. Like, he had some good ideas. I don't know. But can I just tell you, you can't really take Jesus like that. Now, if you don't actually look at who he was, you can take it. You can be like, oh, that's what I think. But if you actually look at the stuff he says, you have to look at it and go, would a great teacher say things like, eat my flesh and drink my blood, or else you have no life in you? Well, that doesn't sound like a very good teacher. That's the kind of thing that a great moralist would never say. They would never claim that they in and of themselves had the path to eternal life for people, right? Like, it's nuts. It really is crazy. I'm just saying it's audacious that someone would say that. It's audacious that he would say that he has the key to escaping the human condition and giving eternal life. I mean, isn't that the thing you're the most afraid of? If you really, like, slowed down and thought about it, like, none of us hope to someday wake up in a bed next to somebody who's passed away, right? None of us. You know what most people want is they want their death to be very quick, right? Do you know why we want it to be quick? Because we don't want to have any time to have to think about it. What's going to happen next? I need you to hear how crazy what Jesus is saying is. He's saying, I have a way to get to what's next. It's nuts, unless he can prove it. Well, what if he could prove it? Now, see, Jesus did die. Did you know? You know that, right? I mean, like, he died. He was crucified on a cross. If you don't know what this is, I'm not going to go into great detail about it, but they literally nailed his arms and his legs to a piece of wood after beating him all night long. They beat him all night long. They put thorns on his head in the shape of a crown to mock him and make fun of him. And they used rods to whack the crown of thorns into his head. So they whipped him. They whipped him over and over again, shredding his back. So by the time he is crucified, Jesus will die fairly quickly. Normally, people who are crucified last for days. Jesus lasted for hours. And he dies. Now, some of you may be saying, but Kent, couldn't you have faked that? Well, I mean, I guess he could have. Like, he could have been like, I'm going to stop breathing now. I'm dead. Take me off the cross. And he could just pretend. And they would, you know, except for the fact that there were these Roman soldiers who were experts at execution. Like, they knew how to do this. And they knew what scientists have now told us happens is that when a person's heart is put under the kind of stress that Jesus' heart would have been under, his heart would start to expand, and the pericardium, the sac that's around your heart, begins to fill with fluid, and it literally crushes your heart and can cause it to kind of explode. And so if you've ever read the historical eyewitness accounts of this, you know that what happened was after the Roman soldiers thought Jesus was probably dead, he stopped breathing, he stopped moving, he stopped moaning. They take a spear and they shove it up into his ribs. Why? Because they know that when a person dies like this from crucifixion, probably would have been on this side, not this side, that when they die from it, that there will be blood and water that flows together, because they didn't know about the pericardium in the heart, but they did know that there was this water that would build up on their chest. And when they stab Jesus, blood and water flows. Now listen to me. Because someone dying, even dying an unjust death, it's nothing special. It's nothing special. But what's special is what happens after. See, Christians, you may not know this. Maybe you don't really know why we celebrate Easter. You're like, it's about a bunny, right? It's not really about a bunny. That's like a little fun thing we do to have the bunny. But what the reason Easter exists is because Jesus didn't just die a terrible death. The reason exists, and the reason Christians gather to celebrate, is because he rose from the dead. Huh? He rose from the dead. Listen, the reason we celebrate is that Jesus made a claim. He didn't just rise from the dead. He said, I am going to die. And then that he himself would raise himself back from the dead. He would flex his muscles, and the grave couldn't hold him down. That's why Johnny Cash is singing that song. And guess what? He did it. He did it. He rose from the dead. There are so many reasons to believe that Jesus rose from the dead. Some of you maybe are sitting out there going, okay, Kent, I'm with you. I get the escape room thing, and I get the, Jesus dying. It's cool that he fed the 5,000. I don't know if I really believe that, but whatever. It's kind of cool. Like, you kind of got me. I'm interested, but what's the point? Like, I need you to know, it's not, I don't stand up here. I didn't give my life to this because I wanted to make a bunch of money as a pastor. Pastors, most of us don't make a bunch of money. I know that there's a few of them out there that are like, you just give me more money, I could buy another jet, right? But most of us, that's not who we are. I give my life to this. I have given my life for the last 20-some years because I believe without a shadow of a doubt that Jesus really rose from the dead. Why do I believe that? Could I just tell you a few reasons I believe it? Could I tell you why I believe it? Listen, now remember earlier I made a little comment about women, and some of you may have felt like, What's wrong with women? Well, you know that for thousands of years, women were not treated very well, right? Like, it's only in recent history that we've even started to adjust that and kind of come into terms with work. But there is a place where women actually held a higher value than anywhere else in culture, and it was in Christianity. Did you know that? See, everywhere else, like actually in the world that Jesus lived in, for a woman to testify, to be a witness to something, she would not have been listened to. Right? They would say, no, is there a man who could testify about this? I don't need to hear from a woman, I need to hear from a man, because the testimony of women wasn't considered to be valid or trustworthy. Does this make sense to you? So let me tell you something that's really interesting to me. In the historical eyewitness accounts that we have of Jesus raising from the dead, do you know who the first people are to be the eyewitnesses of Jesus risen from the dead? It's women. Now, if you're going to make up a religion to try to buy more jets and make more money and control people and get power, would you take and make the very first eyewitnesses of the central event to the entire thing, would you take that and make the eyewitnesses people that everyone would discredit? The only reason you would do that is if it's actually historically accurate that that's who saw him first. If you're making it up, you would have it be men, and not only men, you would have it be the men who were closest to him, who are the ones who will eventually be kind of the pillars of the church. But guess what? Those guys are dopes. They don't believe it. They actually, they're cowards. Did you know that? The women are at the cross watching Jesus die. Most of the men, except for one, have all ran away. They've run back to their jobs that they used to do. And when they're told that Jesus has risen from the dead, they're not sure they believe it. And they run out and they're afraid to go in. I mean, they really look like idiots. They look like fools. If you were going to make a religion where you were the guy who was kind of central to talking about it and setting it up, would you, like, does that ring more of fiction or of truth that somebody would be afraid and not believe that somebody had risen from the dead? I think if you were going to make it up, you'd want to make yourself look good in it, right? There are so many reasons. One of the most important reasons to me, though, is this. See, every one of those guys, except for one, there was one disciple who died of old age. All the rest died premature deaths. And when they died with people saying to them, "You deny that you saw Jesus raised from the dead, or we will kill you." And they would say, "I can't deny it because I saw it." Now, I know there are a lot of people who would die for a lie, right? But there aren't, I don't know anybody who would die for a lie that they knew was a lie. Do you? And not just die for that lie, but like the Apostle Peter, he said, "I can't deny it because I saw it." And he said, "By the way, when you crucify me, I can't be crucified the way my Lord and Savior was crucified, so turn me upside down. I don't deserve to die the way he died." James the apostle, they took him up to the top of the temple, the Jewish leaders did, and they said, "You deny that you saw Jesus raised from the dead, or we will toss you off of this 2-3-story building." James stood at the top of this building and said, "I can't deny it." And they threw his body off, and people stoned him as he laid there. Over and over and over again, these people went to their death, not just claiming that they saw Jesus alive after the resurrection, but believing that they had seen him. Actually, there's good historical evidence that there were over 500 people. Did you know this? That there were over 500 eyewitnesses that saw Jesus alive. There's historical documentation to this, that even scholars who are non-Christian scholars say that is reliable text. Like, we can believe that that was written, and we can believe that those people at least thought they saw Jesus alive. They probably didn't, but we can believe that they thought they did. 500 people who claim that they saw Jesus alive. I just want you to know this isn't some fairy tale. This isn't some history lesson that you can just ignore and it's not important. It is the most central event to all of history that Jesus not only claimed that he would die and raise from the dead, but he did it. There's so many reasons to believe Jesus rose from the dead. And here's the deal. What this means is Jesus is only crazy if he's lying. But if he's telling the truth about eternal life, and he's the one who's our escape. He is the one who has the keys to death and to life. Death, that thing that holds you locked in fear. You know, that thing that terrifies you when you really think about it at night. If you've ever seen Christians and seen them after a funeral and thought, how are they so calm? What is going on with them? This is why. Because our hope and our faith is not in ourselves and in what we can do, but it's that God who came to earth in the form of a man, and he came and he said, "I've got the keys," and he dangled them around, and then he went through death himself, and he came back just to prove, "See, I told you I could unlock that door, and I can unlock it for you too." Listen, this is what Jesus says when he speaks to the Apostle John late in life. he comes and he talks to John and he says this to him in Revelation 1:18. He says this, I am the living one. I am the living one. Not just I lived, I am the living one. I was dead and now look, I am alive forever and ever. And I want you to pay attention to what he says at the end. And I hold the keys of death and Hades. He has the keys in his hand. And you know what? He is just waiting to unlock it for you. I have never not, that's a double negative for those of you who are following, I have never not made it out of an escape room. I've never not made it out of one. You know why? It's not because Kent's super smart and I'm pretty brilliant. I just don't like to flaunt it. Did I hear a wow out there? I'm really not very smart. My wife is a genius, though. I've never not made it out of an escape room because there are these people called the clue people. They're clue guy, clue gal, and they sit out there and they watch. It's got to be either the most fun job or the most boring job. I don't know which, but they watch a little computer screen with you on it and they laugh at you is how I picture it. Like, oh, silly people, don't put the block there. And you're trying to escape and they watch. And the moment that you need help, you go, hey, clue guy. And he goes, yes. And you're like, could you give us a clue? And he says, yeah, you guys have the blocks in the wrong order. So you need to figure out a different order. Try something different, right? And you try it and you figure it out. And then I've never not made it out. Because the clue, I've never also done it without the clue guy or the clue gal. I've always had to use their help. I was thinking about today, and I was thinking about you being here. You don't know, but we've been praying for you for a long, long time, for this moment for you. And I was thinking about how crazy it is to me that we all go through this life thinking, I got to figure out how to escape all this stuff. And we keep trying things, and we try things, and we try things, and we try things. And it feels like we're never getting any real traction in life, right? I mean, it just feels that way. And then it hit me. There's this clue guy. He has the keys. He knows how to unlock the doors. Why in the world would you not say, hey, clue guy, I need some help? Why would you not turn to him? What if all the stuff that has kept you from Jesus and from God for so many years, maybe you grew up going to church and it was the most boring thing in the world and preachers just bored the snot out of you and there wasn't any life in it and you were like, I don't want anything to do with that. Or maybe your parents got a divorce and it messed you up and they talked about being Christians but they didn't live that ever and you were like, I don't want anything to do with that. Or maybe you just went through some really bad stuff as an adult and it just drove you away and you just haven't been to church in a long time. I don't know what it is, whatever it is, but why would you keep trying to go through life all by yourself when there is this God who really loves you so very deeply that he didn't have to step out of heaven and become a man and walk around like we do? He didn't. Did you know when he used the bathroom, he had to do the same stuff to clean himself that you have to? He was God. Yet he had to do that kind of stuff. You imagine God. How embarrassing for him. How embarrassing. But he stepped out of all that, not because he needed it, but because we needed it. He wanted to help us go, stop trying to be the hero of our own story and for him to become the hero of your story and to make you look like a hero. He came to give you new life, but you know, it does take you doing something. You have to turn to him and go, hey, clue guy, I need some help here. I don't know how to say it any more succinctly, but he loves you desperately. He gave everything to know you and to be with you. He gave it all to show that he had the keys to life and death himself and that he could give it to you. Why would you wait any longer? Why would you wait any longer? Look, in the next few moments, we're going to watch. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to watch a video. It's going to be about the cross and talk about what we were really meant for. And it's going to lead you towards Jesus. And then after that, we're going to sing a song. And during that song, we'll go and partake of communion. And we will eat these elements that represent the flesh and the blood of Jesus. For those of you who are Christians, you know that he is the bread of life, that he is the thing you devour. He is the only way you make it through life is by devouring him and finding new life in him. But could I ask you, if you're here today, and all of you just do this for me, that way nobody feels left out or feels pointed out. But in a few minutes, I'm going to ask everybody, before we watch that video, to take out this card. You can scan it if you want, so you don't have to hold the card. Take out the card, and I want you to think about, is there a step that Jesus, that you could take towards God this morning? That you could walk towards him? Because I will tell you what, he came to give you brand new life. To bring freedom where you had no freedom. To bring hope where you feel hopeless. To walk you out of shame and guilt. He came to bring peace in your life. Doesn't peace sound so wonderful? He came to do all of that for you. And for some reason, we sit there and we ignore him. He's just waiting for you to go, hey, clue guy, I need a clue. Not I need a clue. I need you. So this morning, I want to just challenge you during this next video. Everybody right now, lean forward. Actually do this. Lean forward. Grab one of these cards for me. Yeah, that'd be awesome if you do that. And just think about it. If there's a decision that you need to make during that song, during communion and offering time, you can put this card in the box. Just pray over it. Drop it there. Maybe your prayer will go something like this. I'm not even sure you're there, God. But I'm going to try it. So what do you have to lose than just trying it? And talk to him. If you need to talk to somebody, last service, I had somebody come up and said, I want new life in Jesus. And we talked about getting new life in Jesus, and I prayed for them. If you need that, there will be several of us up here that you can come and talk to or come and pray. But this, watch this video and do me a favor. Think about your life. What are your next steps? Are you ready to let Jesus help you escape? Check this out.